Good morning, early birds. You've caught the Weekend Worm, a special edition that recaps the top stories of the week and a heads up on what the newsroom is following for the upcoming week and down the road. It's the first week of February 2026, Saturday and Sunday, January 31st and February 1st. I'm Carl Lengel, your host. The weather continues to dominate many casual conversations. The mid-Atlantic and southern states in the U.S. seem to be enduring a more troublesome winter, while many here in our region are keeping our short-sleeved shirts in the laundry cycle as the days warm up. Across the state today, we'll expect mostly partly sunny conditions, highs in the upper 40s, good winds across most of the area. Tonight, cloudy, lows dropping around 30. On Sunday, partly sunny, high in the upper 40s, and a little bit of wind. Sunday night, partly cloudy, lows in the mid-20s, little wind. Mostly sunny on Monday, highs in the 40s, and a light wind. And mostly cloudy Monday night, lows in the 20s, winds light. A longtime auto mechanic in the town of Freud, Montana, has been swept up in President Donald Trump's immigration crackdown. Border Patrol recently arrested Roberto Orozco Ramirez. Orozco Ramirez is the community's mechanic and volunteers as a youth baseball coach. Montana Free Press's Nora Mabee has been reporting on the community's reaction to his arrest and sat down with Montana Public Radio's Eleanor Smith to go over the details.
Nora, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. For those who don't know, Freud has a population just under 200. What can you tell us about the Orozco Ramirez arrest and why it happened?
Yeah, so what I learned through conversations with community members was that Border Patrol had been stationed outside of Orozco Ramirez's business, Orozco Diesel. It's a mechanic shop, and also outside of his home. People also said Border Patrol was following his sons and pulling them over whenever they left the house. His sons are U.S. citizens. And so I asked Border Patrol a series of questions on why they were stationed there and also what their interaction was with his sons. And I didn't get a response. And so the county sheriff also posted that these Border Patrol agents were trying to serve a warrant and that he helped facilitate this arrest on Sunday. And so on Sunday, Orozco Ramirez was in Roosevelt County Jail, and then by Tuesday, he was transferred to Cascade County Jail, and then on Wednesday, he had his first hearing in court.
Tell me a little bit about Roberto Orozco Ramirez. Who is he, and what was his life like in Freud?
Yeah, so Roberto is a 42-year-old father of four. He's been living in Freud for more than a decade, and he built and started his own business called Orozco Diesel, and he's a beloved member of the community. People told me that he one time worked all night and in really cold temperatures to repair a school bus that had lost heat. People also said he was, you know, a fixture at all these community events, coming to school events, sports events. He was a coach. His four sons play sports in the community. They go to school in the community. So people really feel attached to him, and they really know him well since it's a community of 195 people.
So Freud is a red town. The population voted predominantly for President Donald Trump. But as you said, Orozco Ramirez and his family are very popular in the community. How are his neighbors reacting to his detention?
75% of people who voted in the last election in Freud voted for President Trump. So this is sort of forcing a reckoning with the policies. So people told me, you know, they were shocked to see this. First, they said they understood Trump's policies to be more about arresting and deporting criminals and gang members. And, you know, I should note that the complaint about Orozco Ramirez says he has no criminal history. And they also said they were shocked to see his immigration crackdown reach this tiny corner of rural Montana.
Can you describe what community members are doing now?
Yeah, it's been really interesting to see everything they're doing. So on Sunday, just before he was detained, a handful of protesters had signs out near where Border Patrol was stationed supporting Orozco Ramirez. And then after he was in custody, people have done a lot of organizing. They've organized to write members of Montana's delegation, basically asking for them to take a closer look at this case. They have organized fundraisers for the family and ways to collect donations for his legal fees. And then, you know, on Wednesday, 14 members from the the Freud community drove 7 hours one way to attend his hearing, and the hearing lasted just 8 minutes. And after it was over, they cried and hugged, and then they got back in their cars and they drove 400 miles home.
What are the charges Orozco Ramirez is facing right now?
Yeah, so he has been charged with two offenses. One is illegal re-entry into the United States. His complaint alleges that he was removed by ICE in 2009 from the U.S. and then came back. And then the second charge is for threatening federal officers. It says that when Border Patrol, dressed in plain clothes and in unmarked cars, came to his business, he was suspicious of them. And then as they were leaving, he yelled threats at them. And then as they were driving away in their car, threw a piece of 2x6 lumber in their direction. And I should say that both of those charges, you know, if he is found guilty of them, they carry the maximum penalty of hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines and years of imprisonment. There's a lot on the line for this family and this community. And at the hearing, people were really nervous about what was going to happen next.
Of course. There are a few upcoming hearings in the Orozco Ramirez case. What can we expect to see happen next?
Yeah, so on February 5th, he will have a preliminary hearing in Great Falls. That's where a judge will determine if there's enough evidence in his case to move forward. And then on February 9th, there will be a detention hearing in Great Falls. And a judge there will determine if he needs to be detained for the remaining part of his case as it plays out.
Nora, thank you so much for being here today. I so appreciate you taking the time to walk us through this situation.
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Tariffs enacted by President Donald Trump last year are still straining Montana farmers. As Montana Public Radio's Victoria Traxler reports, producers are left in limbo as they wait for a ruling on the legality of those tariffs.
In April 2025, President Trump issued a slew of tariffs to catalyze new trade deals. The move led to increased costs and shrunken markets for key Montana agricultural exports like wheat. Montana producer Ben Peterson spoke on a panel organized by the group Tariffs Cost Us, which highlights the impacts from tariffs on U.S. businesses. Peterson explains the market turbulence has made planning nearly impossible.
Large corporations may be able to take advantage of this kind of volatility. Independent farms like mine cannot.
Peterson says for 2026, he's playing it safe. That means delaying upgrades for important equipment like tractors. He may even idle some of his land.
And that means I'm not making money on that ground. I'm possibly losing money on the ground, but I'm losing a whole lot less money than if I was planting wheat.
Trump's use of the presidential emergency declaration to set tariffs has faced legal challenges. Three lawsuits are under consideration by the Supreme Court. Their outcome will impact a case out of Montana, too. Members of the Blackfeet Nation filed a lawsuit against the federal government last year, claiming tariffs impede tribal sovereignty and harm their businesses. Co-plaintiff and state legislator Susan Weber says producers are just holding on.
Now we're just at a stalemate. We're just not doing anything. We're static.
The Supreme Court was expected to issue a tariff ruling last week, but Weber and her co-plaintiffs continue to wait for that decision. In Missoula, I'm Victoria Traxler.
Yellowstone County's Food Authority is cracking down on products derived from kratom, a Southeast Asian plant with psychoactive chemicals they say can be deadly in concentrated doses. Enforcement began January 1st after months of notice. Some businesses are pushing back. Yellowstone Public Radio's Kayla DeRoche reports.
Roughly 24 locations with food and beverage licenses in Yellowstone County sell kratom products, including a handful of specialty bars. In mid-January, 67-year-old retired ultrasound technician Roland Morrison is hanging out at his favorite one.
You talk to people and meet friends, and it's just a nice place to be.
The kratom plant contains trace amounts of the psychoactive chemical 7-hydroxymetrogenine, or 7-OH, which can be concentrated into pills, shots, and various other forms. Morrison says he only drinks tea brewed from the kratom leaf, which he says is more mild.
It relaxes me.
Other customers here say kratom tea helps with pain, like 39-year-old construction worker Ryan Mork.
Doesn't take care of the pain, but it definitely helps you mitigate some of that without having to use other pharmaceuticals and things of that nature.
36-year-old contractor Jesse Hunt says he drinks kratom and another plant, kava, as an alternative to alcohol.
I've met a lot of really great people just from the kava community.
This location gave YPR permission to interview its customers with the condition we not name the business. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration labels the kratom plant an unsafe food additive. The local food code authority told tea houses like this one to remove kratom by January 1st or risk fines and legal action. Some members of the local tea bar scene are pushing back. Kratom and its byproducts can come in pills, powders, cans, and teas. They say there is a big difference between natural kratom and synthetic versions like 70H. But Yeltsin County Health Officer John Forte at Riverstone Health says the community can't afford to wait for regulation to draw those boundaries.
Montanans are dying now.
Quantifying overdose deaths can be difficult, though. According to the Montana Department of Justice, the state crime lab only recently introduced more advanced testing that can detect specific chemicals like 70H. Data from the state crime lab show kratom chemicals in 25 overdose investigations since 2020, 7 from a single source and 18 alongside other drugs. But death isn't the only concern the substance poses, according to drug counselor Marlene Upchurch with the Rimrock Foundation in Billings. Upchurch says her clients are struggling with addiction to kratom products, many of which are available over-the-counter at smoke shops and gas stations.
The shots, people take those a lot, and then the packets of however many milligrams of capsules are in there. But a lot of people will just go and grab those little shots from the gas stations.
This month, Riverstone began sending inspectors to different locations in Yellowstone County to check for compliance. A handful of the roughly 30 locations are tea houses, but many are gas stations with food and beverage licenses. Some are already following updated federal guidance that restricts kratom and its derivatives, like 1 cent Zip Trip in Billings. Manager Skyla Allen says staff removed kratom products months ago.
We used to sell, like, little kratom shots. And we had a bunch of people coming in buying those. But I told them, once they're gone, they're gone. We're not bringing them back in.
Riverstone Health says, as of this month, most businesses have already removed kratom products or are working on coming into compliance. William Grundhauser runs the DeCava House in downtown Billings and says he's not one of them.
We passed our inspection right before 2026 came about with no problem, with a verbal warning that they would be back to take away our best-selling products and our essentially our business.
Grundhauser also owns a martial arts business in West Billings. That's where he is on a recent weekday in January, with fighters practicing on the mats just through the front doors. He says he's in favor of regulation, but that food code enforcement fails to address locations like smoke shops while targeting his business.
If you want to be educated by people that are passionate about this, that believe in it, that know the benefits of it, and the risks of it, come see us and let us educate you.
Yellowstone County Health Officer John Forte says there isn't enough research yet to fully understand the risks.
And until federal guidelines change and we have clear scientific data to prove that kratom is safe for human consumption in food and beverage, it will continue to be unallowed within licensed food establishments.
Lawmakers are considering measures to take in the 2027 legislative session. In Billings, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Wyoming lawmakers advanced a school funding bill that would raise teacher salaries, but also cut teachers and increase class sizes. Wyoming Public Radio's Jeff Victor has more.
The legislature's School Finance Committee has completed its work on a school funding bill that would revamp the way Wyoming funds public education. Private consultants hired by the state had recommended an evidence-based model that came with a higher price tag. But the committee, almost all Republicans, cut it down by upping class sizes and cutting teacher positions. At one point, the bill would have cut more than 700 teachers, but lawmakers added a few hundred back in on Friday. The model will also raise the average salary for classroom teachers to $70,000 a year. But Albany School's business manager, Tristan Green, told the committee that's not enough.
And so those teachers aren't coming up here saying thank you for the 11% or whatever the raise ends up being, because they know more than likely they're going to lose some friends. They're going to have to work harder.
the bill now heads to the full legislature for more consideration. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Jeff Victor.
Montana's unemployment rate in December rose to 3.4%, but it continues a streak of four consecutive years of unemployment at or below 3.4%, Governor Greg Gianforte's office announced this week. The state's rate is 1% lower than the national December unemployment rate of 4.4%. The news release from the governor's office reports Montana remained in the top 10 states with the lowest unemployment rates. The release says the state's labor force added approximately 1,150 workers over the last month, while total employment rose by 500. Meanwhile, payroll jobs grew by more than 2,000 in December, with the largest gains in construction and leisure activities. Wyoming's unemployment rate in December 2025 remained at 3.4% for the second consecutive month, the Research and Planning Section of Wyoming's Workforce Service Department reported also this week. Wyoming's state rate is 1% lower than the national December unemployment rate of 4.4%, as is neighboring Montana. From November to December, the unemployment rate in most of the counties in Wyoming remained relatively unchanged, except in Teton County. The rate dropped 2% as the winter tourist season ramped up. Unemployment rate has dropped slightly in Platte and Lincoln counties. It rose slightly in Weston, Carbon, Niobrara, and Crook counties. Over the last year, the total non-farm employment in Wyoming decreased by some 800 jobs, according to estimates from current employment statistics. There was an earthquake in central Montana Thursday afternoon. The National Weather Service in Great Falls reported a 4.2 earthquake at 12:41 Thursday afternoon. The U.S. Geological Survey reports the earthquake was 7.5 miles northeast of Malmstrom Air Force Base. The depth of the quake is estimated by USGS at just over 6 miles. Initial reports to the USGS indicate the earthquake was felt as far north as Shelby and as far south as Helena. Some Laurel residents don't like the state's plan to build a psychiatric hospital near town. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports the backlash came quickly after state officials announced the site location.
Last week, the Montana Board of Investments told Laurel City Council members it had found a site for a 32-bed facility that will treat criminal defendants mentally unfit to stand trial. Numerous residents told city council members Tuesday the location isn't suitable. That includes Matt Torix, superintendent of Laurel Public Schools.
My concern is about safety for students, and I do not feel that this lends itself to the safety of our children.
The edge of the proposed property is near an elementary school. Numerous residents cited that as a concern, as well as the potential for reduced property values. The state says it needs the facility because it can take up to a year for defendants to get a bed at the current state hospital in Warm Springs. Laurel residents say the state and the city haven't been transparent about the project. The state health department noted in a statement that Director Charlie Brereton outlined the state's plan to the council in early December. In Columbia Falls, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Local businesses around Montana closed their doors or altered their operations Friday to protest against immigration enforcement actions. Montana Public Radio Shaley Rager reports the closures are part of a national movement.
Ben Eisinger owns True Water Fly Shop downtown Kalispell. In a video posted to social media, he said it wasn't easy to close his business for the day, but...
When you wake up and you just want to make a difference, but you don't feel like you can, you can. You can make the decision to be closed. You can make the decision to help in some way.
Eisinger said he knows the national strike may anger some, but he said what's occurred in Minnesota isn't okay. Federal immigration agents shot and killed two Minneapolis residents in recent weeks who were protesting large ICE operations in their city. Several other people have also died during immigration sweeps in other parts of the country. Organizers nationwide called for a general strike on work, school, and shopping on Friday. Many in Montana participated, like Iho's Korean Grill in Bozeman. The restaurant's owners wrote on Facebook that they're protesting against abuse of government power. Other businesses offered alternative services, like Clyde Coffee in Missoula, which stayed open to serve free drinks and cookies. Montago Coffee in Helena committed its total profits from Friday to a legal fund for a Freud resident recently detained on immigration charges. In Helena, I'm Shaylee Reiger.
The University of Montana hopes to hire its next president by spring. The university systems chief concedes it's an ambitious timeline, but it's confident that all building blocks are in place to make it possible. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
Montana Commissioner of Higher Education Clay Christian's new year has been a whirlwind ever since UM President Seth Bodner abruptly announced his resignation last Wednesday.
That's what we get handed sometimes, and that's just fine.
Bodner's announcement did not explicitly explain his decision. However, speculation is rampant he intends to run for the U.S. Senate to challenge Republican incumbent Steve Daines. Christian tells MTPR Bodner is clearing out his office, adding his resignation should be complete by the weekend. Christian sent an email to the campus community Thursday outlining the search process for UM's next president. He met with student, staff, and faculty leadership last week to discuss the transition. Christian says they're ready to build on the accomplishments of the past several years. Those include enrollment growth and record high student retention rates.
There's a sense that they have done it together and that momentum, that energy can continue to move forward in a positive way.
The Office of the Commissioner of Higher Education and the Board of Regents have hired a third party to help with the presidential search. Consultant AGB Search helped recruit Bodner over 8 years ago. Christian doesn't think an internal search advisory committee will be necessary.
This isn't a campus that needs a reset, or we need to rethink all there is on that campus. I think that was done when President Bodner started. I think we need someone that can meet the campus where they're at and move us forward to the next level.
Christian says he'll help handle the routine day-to-day leadership tasks of the UM campus and currently does not think it will be necessary to appoint an interim president. Reporting from Missoula, I'm Edward O'Brien.
Fascism is bubbling in many heated political conversations these days. I spoke with MSU Billings history professor Dr. Jennifer Lynn about the 20th century political movement that decimated the European continent, killing millions of civilians.
What is fascism? What is a definition that we can kind of frame as we go through this?
At its core, fascism is an ultra-nationalist and authoritarian ideology. And at the center of fascism is this idea that the unity of the sort of national community should be like prioritized over the rights of an individual. And within this is also both an acceptance and a celebration of violence. This is inherent historically in fascist regimes and ideology. Fascism posits that there's one authoritarian leader who sort of embodies like the national will, right? So that this leader is the only person who can truly sort of understand the destiny of the nation. And sort of loyalty to this leader and to these principles are part of the sort of practice of fascism. And of course, fascism is completely opposed to the idea of equality. It's opposed to democracy. It's opposed to the idea that individual rights are accessible and should be available to everyone. So that's sort of the heart of the ideology of fascism. I would also add that fascist ideologies often have a racialized component with them.
How did it gain popularity, its historical context?
Yeah, so the context here is really the political and economic situation after World War I. Of course, fascism arose in Italy under Mussolini. And in 1917, the Bolshevik revolution in Russia essentially established the Soviet Union, right, under the ideology of communism. And so in this context, this sort of idea of communism provides sort of the scary enemy, right? So if there's economic unrest, if there's social turmoil, people could turn, right, to communism and say, if we don't meet the challenges of sort of the economic turmoil after World War I, people are going to turn towards communism. And Mussolini and others believed that democracy could not meet the challenges of these economic problems.
Too slow.
Too slow, right? Okay. That the state needed, to sort of intervene, right? And sort of have more control. And this really intensifies in Germany, you know, in 1929. Up until 1929, the Nazis were a fairly like fringe party. But in 1929, during the Great Depression and intense economic unrest, the Nazis essentially proposed a program that both provided a scapegoat, which were, of course, Jews and others they deemed as outsiders, as the sort of source of economic unrest, and also then made the argument it's either fascism or communism. And again, this argument that liberal democracy could not meet the needs and challenges of an economic crisis. And to many, many German nationalists and conservatives, it was much more comfortable for them to accommodate fascism than it would be, right, to think about more like communistic policies on the left. And really, while there was, of course, the exclusion deeply embedded in the racial categories and the othering of the Nazi Party, if people felt like they were included, they also received like material benefits, right? That they were not going to be harmed. They had somebody to blame. They belonged, you know, they would be able to be successful, to
it
keep
could
their
never
jobs.
Happen to me. Yeah.
Yeah, it won't happen to me because yeah. I'm not an outsider. And so I think it's sort of looking at this in like the nuanced way of how do people feel like they're going to benefit from a fascist regime. And so we can see people being willing to capitulate to acts of violence, to things that are outside of the norms in a liberal democracy in order to protect their own interests.
Dr. Jennifer Lin teaches history at MSU Billings, including a course on Germany's economy during and post-World War II. The MSU Billings History Department will host Montanan Andrew Laszlo Jr. this coming week in a Tuesday evening presentation. The lecture will take place at the MSU Billings Library at 6:30. It includes recollections and lessons learned from Andrew Laszlo Sr. and his book, Footnote to History, From Hungary to America, The Memoir of a Holocaust Survivor. Andrew Laszlo Sr. survived the Nazi camps and eventually became a renowned Hollywood cinematographer. That's the Weekend Worm for this first week of February 2026. We'll have another episode of The Worm on Monday, and we'll keep these weekend editions coming too. I'm Carl Lengel. Have a great weekend.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.